Welcome to the Practical Church Revitalization Podcast. We look at revitalization in real time, examining the ups and downs of revitalizing and replanting historic and legacy churches throughout New England and the U.S. Now here's your hosts.
Hey y'all, it's Don here for the Practical Church. Oh, I did it again. I'm not used to it being the Practical Revitalization Podcast. But yeah, it's me. I'm doing this solo because I'm kind of launching this hot off the heels of the recently released study on sexual misconduct in the SBC. This affects me as a Southern Baptist pastor. And I know a lot of people are going to be kind of hitting this. I'm in all sorts of groups. I can see both sides. I'd like to think that I am a very even-minded person. I've always been told that by a number of people, that I'm fairly balanced, and I always get yelled at by both sides for being that. But I wanted to kind of bring this to the forefront and just kind of talk about this. So this report was done. It was an investigation on sexual misconduct allegations within the SBC. And I guess we shouldn't be surprised that it happens in denominations. And I know that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to sit there and point out, well, the SBC really isn't a denomination, and we're not. We don't have the polity of top-down. You know, I'm in a church which I've been here 5 years and probably would be moving on, from it, or getting ready to move on, because they want to switch for new blood, as it would be, because that's the way stuff like the Methodist, I believe it's like every 5 to 7 years, they swap out the pastor. But we are a network of churches that have autonomous power, I guess you would say, autonomous recognition. For the most part, the SBC churches are congregational, but there are a growing number of elder-led churches. And so, really, the big thing I've been seeing, so I'm trying not to make too much noise, the big thing I've been seeing in this is that a number of people, you know, they're trying to pick this out, and I'm trying to think of how to really be fair in both sides, because I want to be. And I know I'm not going to please everybody on this, but please hear me out to the end of this. So, on one side, you have the group that reads the report, sees the abuse allegations. We want to make sure that's clear. These are allegations. These are not 100% fact, we should say. You know, there has been no, as far as I know, except for maybe two of them, there has been no legal investigation by authorities into the allegations, which has caused lawsuits, men being made to register as sex offenders, as would be the case. That stuff has not happened. So we want to make sure that we emphasize that this is allegations. And the reason why I'll point out this is, as the list came out there, and they debated about the list, and really the question becomes, okay, what do we do about this list? Well, you have one side that's saying, don't put out the list because it's going to open up to lawsuits. It's going to open the SBC up to lawsuits, because one of the things that they did was do away with the legal counsel representation. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of questionable stuff that has happened in this. But on one side, you have one group that wants people to know, hey, this is the list of people to be aware of. I don't think that they're saying that they are perpetrators. They are 100% pervy. But what they're trying to say is, hey, if you're going to be hiring somebody, notice this list and this guy's name is on there, and just be aware who you're hiring. On the other side, you have the people that are saying, hey, what happened to innocent until proven guilty? And I think that there is a case right now where we see this. There is a retired pastor in Mobile, Alabama, Charles Brown, who's 79, and his name appears on this list. And now he's having to fight at almost 80 years old to clear his name. And this is what we need to understand. And he's in here pointing out, you know, what happened. There's an article. Who put this out? The Pathway, NBC Pathway. And they have this article out there, and they're showing where, you know, hey, this stuff came out here, but understand, there's a lot of stuff here. We want accountability, and we do. We should have accountability. I don't think a church should be hiring anybody without having to do a Corey and a sorry check. I mean, and be educated. Please, if you're listening to this, be educated. If a person has sexually assaulted somebody or been accused of sexual assault, that's not going to show up on a Corey. That Corey is criminal record. The sorry is the sexual record. There's two different things, because what happens is, in most states, they want to regulate and separate the two. And that's what's important for pastors to understand in this. And that's what I want you to understand. So, what is going on? Why are we talking about this? Well, this is the thing. In one side, you have the group that, you know, they want to see the accountability. They're looking at this whole thing. But they seem to have stamped on people the majority of this list. They're saying, these people bad, get rid of them. And on the other side, you have the people that are, you know, want to see the accountability, and they're asking the questions like, why are we paying for the money? Why are we doing this? We're not a Presbytery denomination. You know, it's not like we can do what, like, the Catholic Church did and defrock people. But this is the thing that ends up happening. So we have the two sides. The two sides are arguing. It's getting ugly out there. And when we look at what is going on, we have to understand that both sides make good points, but both sides also have bad points going on. Now, the good side on one, you know, I'll say, I don't want to put colors. I don't want to put, you know, left or right, because I'm going to, you know, put it out there. But we will say on side A, they want to see accountability. They look at this and they say, this has gone on for too long. Why isn't anything being done about it? Side B, on the other hand, I think to a point they're agreeing. They're saying, okay, yeah, these allegations are happening, but why are people going to the executive committee? Why are people going to their state or local association when this isn't a denominational thing? Why aren't they calling the police if this is true? And there is the thing. We have to look at this. So while side A is saying accountability, side B is making a good point on that, is why aren't we calling the police? I can tell you, now I live in the Northeast, I live in New England, and we have had a number of cases here over the last 20 years. One of the most heinous ones, actually a few heinous ones, one of them happened at my father-in-law's old church. There was a case there which went to court, and basically, after it went to court, the pastor and a number of the elders were sued. It resulted in the pastor stepping down from the church. It resulted in a number of the elders resigning and stepping down. And it took a long time. I think it took close to 2.5 years for them to find a pastor to take over that church because of the reputation. And this is what I know I'm not from the South, but up here, you know, like we say, up here, you know, if you can get a church that's 300, 400, 500 people, that's huge. So when we look and we see that there are churches that are 1,000 to 2,000, now 2,000 being the mega church number, me and a number of pastors in New England and the Northeast have deemed the term mini-mega. These are churches which are between 800 and 1,999 that have gone multi-site, that have a facility that, you know, houses multiple services. And so this church was a mini mega. This church was well over 1,000 people. And it took them 2.5 years before they could find a pastor willing to work with the mud and mire that was there. So you can understand, too, at the same time, you know, where side B might be saying, you know, let's keep this in-house, let's not make a big thing of it, and where side A is making a huge thing about it, you can see what ends up happening, because in the long run, this actually harms churches. We know it's going to harm churches. We know it's going to harm the reputation, but it really harms reputations in a gigantic way. And so I can tell you that in one of the cases up here, you can look it up. It's a New Hampshire pastor. I don't want to say the names. I could, because it's been all over the media, and you can still Google New Hampshire pastor serving time for statutory rape. That's probably the best way I can say it. But this one pastor at a church plant from a large church, a multi-site church up here, definitely a mega church, he had confessed to the pastor, his sending pastor, of his crime. And his sending pastor immediately went and picked up the phone and called the police. This man was arrested. He's serving 5 to 20 years in jail for what he did. And, you know, it ruined the reputation. I can tell you that for years, the old church's name was out there. The church's initials were DC. I will tell you that much. But the old church's information was out there. And I can tell you that, like, the words on Google were just horrible. And what ultimately ended up happening was they had just gone multi-site themselves. And basically, the multi-site church that sent him to plant this church ended up taking the church under its wing, ended up absorbing the church, and probably about 2 years later closed the campus because it was hard for them to get people over there for that reputation, you know, because of that reputation. So that's something that I think has to be understood. You know, no matter what, this is going to happen. So both sides need to understand that right now, you know, within this understanding that there's going to be a lot of ramifications going on. There's going to be people who are going to read these names, find out where these people were pastoring and like avoiding those churches like the plague. And I will say this, a number of those churches are probably solid biblical churches, but because of one person and one allegation, again, allegations, not guilt, this ends up turning a lot of churches on their sides. So we look at this list, and you know, there are things that have to happen. I do think we do have to have things that have to happen. I think that, you know, for a number of things, this shows also when we are looking at how people are reacting. I know, like, I look and I get yelled at because, hey, I'm a Northeast guy. I'm a Northerner, born and bred Bostonian. You know, there's a lot of times I try to keep my accent a little under wraps because I've lived in three of the New England states and I've lived in Missouri. But here's the thing. Honestly, you know, the SBC comes up here and they plant churches and they want to get Northerners, they want to have, you know, indigenous planters, indigenous pastors. But a lot of times we don't know what's going on. You know, and so, like, one thing that I've seen on social media is, you know, people arguing with the fact of, you know, don't any of these people know what's going on with the SBC? And a lot of these people that are complaining are more north of the Mason-Dixon line. And so when we look at the stuff, why are we not having a fair and balanced look at things? You know, why is it that, you know, I think that's where I'm seeing the most fighting happening, is that we are seeing the people who are Northerners, who want the accountability, against the people who are Southerners, who are, you know, don't you know that we're not a top-down denomination, and, you know, don't you know that, you know, why aren't people calling police? Well, here's the thing, you know, Northerners, one of the things that we deal with up here, just about everybody, including yours truly, had been born into a Catholic family. And so we know of Catholic polity. We have the whole thing, and I see this even within my own church, is don't question the pastor, much like there's the teaching of don't question the priest. And so when it comes to Southern Baptist life and Southern Baptist thoughts and other things, I think the biggest thing I see the lack thereof is probably that we don't know, we really do not know what it's like to be a true Southern Baptist. And I'll say this, like, you know, I always see the thing, oh, come to, you know, go to the convention. Well, here's the thing. Okay, yeah, I'd love to go to the convention, but I'm bivocational. My church, you know, we're struggling, especially in this economy right now, to make sure that we can save for our oil and heat for the summer because we have an oil furnace. And so we have some concerns. We have some things that we're worried about, and we're working on those things. But here's my point about all of this, is what we need to see in all of this is, if the Southern Baptists are all big about their expansion to the Northeast, why aren't you coming up here? I know it's all about, you know, I hear it, you know, it's all about money, it's all about... Listen, you guys want to be, you know, talking about expansion to the Northeast and coming up to New England and New York and all that. You know, I think in my time here, I only have known the furthest was Maryland for the Southern Baptist Convention. I know it's going to be in Indianapolis twice. Indianapolis. I would really like to see it, especially knowing the number of pastors I do. I really would love to see the SBC bring it here, Boston Convention Center. And really get us to know what it means to be Southern Baptist. How the polity works. How does all this stuff work? Because if we don't know how it works, that's going to be the question. And this is what's going to lead to all this infighting with the report, if you will. So then we look at this report, and again, you know, you look at the sides, and that's the thing. Now, what I just said, I know that's going to be controversial. And I know the people on side B are going to be like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. And the people on side A are going to be saying, well, you know, you got to understand that they want to, the SBC, this costs a lot. Well, then maybe it is time, as people were saying during the pandemic, maybe it is time to start thinking about bringing this forward so that people like me and people like the, let's see, out of 360 Baptist churches in this area, I would probably say more than half are bivocational, or run by bivocational pastors. I wouldn't be surprised if 2/3 of our churches were here in New England. So how do we get to fly out to Anaheim this year? And now, I'm not trying to be bitter. Please understand that. I am not being bitter on this. But it's like, you know, you sit there, you look, you're understanding, you're trying to understand this whole report, and you see it, and you don't want to see the denomination split. You don't want to see, you know that there are things that side B is fighting for that you agree with. There are things side A is fighting for that you agree with. But there is also parts of side A and side B that you don't agree with. And some of the time, that might be what you agree with side B that disagrees with side A, or, you know, vice versa. And that's not the point. The point of it is this, that what we are trying to do is we are trying to put it out there that this report is there. And again, while it's allegations, there are people that are sitting there saying that they are victims. And so we do have to look, and we do have to investigate. I'm sorry to say that. I know one side is not going to like it, but we do. What's the old saying? You know, three sides to every story. You know, his, hers, and the truth. And so that's what we need to understand. That's the problem with side A and side B. Side A is taking this person's side. Side B is taking the other person's side. And we're not looking for the truth of the matter. And that's the main point. You know, we need to have this report out there to kind of wake up. And what I wish is that side A and side B would come to understand each other's grievances with what's going on, and truly be the church and truly understand that at the heart of the matter, there are people that are hurt. There are people that want to see justice done for what they say happened to them. And when it comes to the whole thing of, Well, why, you know, why weren't authorities called? Well, here's the question I have. I have a question. Do people really understand what it means to be Southern Baptist? It seems that every pastor knows what it means to be Southern Baptist, except for every Southern Baptist church member. If I'm honest with this, I really wonder, you know, I remember back in the day being in the Assemblies of God, where my dad was a pastor. I remember we had classes on what it meant to be a member of the Assemblies of God Church. And so, that's what I'm wondering, you know, do we need to do that? Anyway, that's it. This has been kind of a rant, but I kind of wanted to get my thoughts on the SBC sexual abuse report out there and try to throw it out there for you to kind of look at and think. You know, again, it's really this thing, you know. I do feel bad for the victims. I feel bad for the men on the report that are innocent, that are going to have to fight for themselves because there's a lot of people putting them in the guilty camp. And it really breaks my heart. It really does. Because it just further, at this point, it just further tears the fabric of the SBC apart. And I know there are people on both sides that are going to sit there and say, Don, you're crazy. But I'm telling you, I cannot shake this feeling that the SBC will be torn in two in the coming years. And I don't want to see that. But I have a feeling it's going to happen. And I can't shake it. So I hate to leave you on that downer, but that's what I wanted to say. So God bless. We'll see you next week.